And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Hello, everyone. Today is Wednesday, January 10th. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Gino. I'm here with Kevin. I'm here with Darren. Please listen to us any way you get your podcast. Like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook. Give us a like, give us a share. Share that post. Get it out there. We want everybody to see it. NFL regular season is now over. Jets and Giants both get a win in Week 18. Now we're going to get ready for Super Wild Card Week. We're going to give you recaps, previews for the weekend of football, past and ahead. We're going to go around the world of sports. We got some interesting Major League Baseball news, some NBA stuff going on, and college football has crowned the champion. Michigan beats Washington 34-13. This is to cap off their 15-0 season. Harbaugh, in his ninth year at Michigan, finally secures his first national title. It's the first title for Michigan since 1997. Donovan Edwards had two TDs in the first quarter, a 41 and 46 yarder that led Michigan out to a nice lead. The Michigan defense kept Penix in line. They were hitting him. They were pressuring him all over the place. Wound up being 17-10 at the half, was 20-13 in the third quarter. And then in the fourth quarter, Blake Corum had two TDs to set up a win for Michigan. Overall, Michigan had 303 rushing yards to Washington's 46. And it was just a complete package from Michigan. Their lines controlled a lot of this game. And they are now the champions. Darren,
let's start. Well, listen, Michigan was the superior team in the beginning and the end. The middle of the game, I thought Washington really kind of held their own, which kind of impressed me a little bit. They did,
but the only problem was they could never get over that hump and get a lead in this game.
No, I don't disagree with you. There was a few pivotal plays. Yeah, go ahead, Kev.
We're going to touch on it, but the overall problem was Washington felt like they were so close to the big play how many times, and Penix was just a little off, either to the wrong shoulder or a little high, or it was just something. And Michigan, I thought, did a great job on the open field tackles, on these little quick little passes out to the wide receivers.
Or they made the play, and there was a penalty on the play, and then the play wound up coming back.
I thought there was a few turning points, and we were texting a little bit during it. The pick to start the second half. Okay, they get the score at the end of the half, basically, right? Now you're getting the ball back. Michigan has to – they get it back with a little bit of time. That the punt, Washington kneels on it, whatever. You don't count those. They get the ball back with a chance to tie. And basically, you know, right out of the gate, trying to throw it away a little bit, just lofts one on the sideline and gets picked off. And it turns into points right away. And all of a sudden, it's no longer a one-score game. And you're like, watch Penix probably, I don't know, I wouldn't say I watched him every week, saw highlights of every week, but probably watched him six times. I thought this was the most inaccurate I'd seen him with open receivers running around. And it wasn't that there were a lot of open receivers, because Michigan played, I thought, a really good shell defense in that back. But I thought that kind of started to turn it. And then another play that I thought was amazing, Washington punts, right? They pin him down to the 7. Michigan gets a 3rd and 8. McCarthy scrambles for 22. So you're thinking that Michigan, who has not shown anything offensively throwing the ball all night, now suddenly he does a 22-yard scramble, then a 12-yard scramble, and all of a sudden just reverses the field position where it looked like Washington might have a shot there. Then I know that you want to touch on this, the hold on Rosengarten. You know, who seemed to have a really bad fourth quarter, third and fourth quarter, right, Kev?
Yeah, he had a rough go of it. I mean, it felt like he was being pushed back a lot into Penix. I thought the referees, for the most part, during most of the game, did a really good job of letting the players play.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't see any of the real ticky-tack fouls. You didn't see too many questionable calls. But that hold, but I still don't know where the hold was, especially when you go back early in the game, first quarter, where a couple of those big runs by Michigan, and they showed the replays where the line, had a clear grasp up by the collar of the defender.
I think they predicted the hold call on the spin and the fall, and I don't think he didn't really pull him. He kind of, I mean, he shoved him, but I don't think he pulled him down. But nonetheless, I think they were assuming a penalty, and that's my take on it, because it wasn't a blatant hold. I know that Kev's nodding. Gino, I think you're nodding as well. That it was a questionable call. But that took away a 33-yard pass to Odunze, who, by the way, even in the last plays of the game, I don't understand why he's not the target. I don't care what kind of coverage, and a lot of times he was kind of open. You just got to throw it to your best guy sometimes, and I thought that Penix missed the mark on that too. Yep. The big play to Loveland, right, the 41-yard play, was almost like a missed pass where the safety's looking to make a play on the ball. Loveland grabs it. The safety's not prepared to tackle him, and he goes for 41. It wouldn't have been as big a play. It would have been a first down. But that was another play where I thought that because the pass was probably a little high, it threw the safety off. And if you watch the safety's reaction, he's playing the ball almost, and Loveland just runs right by. Yeah. And then, obviously, the pick at the end with the return to the eight just cemented it, made it look like it wasn't as close a game as it was. But, you know, there were a lot of pivotal moments, and really Michigan didn't make any major mistakes, and it looked like Washington did. And that's what I took out of it. Kev?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the first two touchdowns, Edwards, the first two times he touched the ball, 41 and 46. The first one bouncing off the pile in the middle and bouncing outside. The second one, he had a hole that you could fit a Mack truck through. And like you said, Darren, after that first quarter, they had 175 yards rushing after one. So they only had 125 the rest of the game. You know, in comparison to the first quarter, Washington did a much better job of at least containing it until the very end there. But like you said, you know.
Yeah, the fourth quarter was the majority of that rushing too, Kev. The fourth quarter was a big part. Yeah. It was like bookended.
Yep. But like I said, between the tight end play, the McCarthy run, all those little things that Michigan made enough plays and made no mistakes, and Washington could never make that play to turn the tide, to give them that spark. And the one time they did, it was called back.
And the funny thing is, Gino pointed out before, they were never able to tie it. They were never able to make it where they were on even terms. Gino, that was like one of your first points. They never got. They played better than Michigan did in the middle of the game for the most part, but it didn't resonate in points or changing the complexion of the game, where Michigan was ever like, okay, now we're neck and neck. Now it's a dogfight. Now it's the next team scores wins type of thing. We're never in that scenario.
Like you said, you started with the
fourth quarter. And Gino started. He texted us. He's like, looks like this one's coming down to the wire. Then all of a sudden, the wheels fell off. It was we all thought it. It wasn't just you. I'm just pointing out what you texted. But the wheels fell off.
And listen, at the beginning of that game, Washington wound up being down so much that they couldn't do anything to try to establish a run. They couldn't do anything to go to any kind of normal game plan because they were playing from behind already. And at that point, you know, even though they did kick a field goal, they're down 14-3 at one point. And it's like, okay, if we give up another touchdown here, it's 21-3. And now we're in real trouble. So, you know, everybody's on edge. Everybody's trying to at least make a play. And, you know, Kev said it. They couldn't get over that hump. They couldn't get that one big play. Okay, here it comes. Maybe we're going to, you know, things are going to settle down now. So.
And also one last point, Nixon had a huge drop on a third down. It was a short pass to him that would have given him a first down and kept the drive alive. And he just looked up and, you know, trying to beat he had the first down easy. It was almost like he was worried about the Michigan defender. I know he's not a starter, but the ball hit him in the hands. Well, we could get to other players that the ball hit them in the hands in the NFL this week as well, where they dropped them in big spots. But Nixon had a chance to extend the drive also, and he missed one too. It was just like every little thing, every time they needed to make just one little extra play, a pass a little bit more accurate, holding on to a tough pass, you know, just opening up a hole or a block, giving the running back any chance. Johnson didn't have any chance at all. He ran so hard for his 2 yards a carry. It was ridiculous. I mean, he had to bounce off people to get 2 yards every single time. It's like watching the Jets.
Yeah. I mean, I was just going to bring up Dylan Johnson. You know, he only had 11 carries. I think he wasn't 100% to begin with.
Nope.
And that Michigan defense, I mean, all the credit in the world to them.
Oh, you know,
we talk about Penix. He had 255. which was his second lowest output. That was the second most yards that Michigan's given up passing. I mean, that just shows you how good that Michigan defense is.
And that line
they can control. On the podcast last week, I said, you know, what you're looking for of Michigan is you contain Penix to about 300, you'd be happy. And they came in under the 300.
And you're right, Kev, because the defensive line was all over Penix. And it wasn't even, you know, all right, fine. They got to him a bunch of times. They hit him a couple of times. But even in the plays that they didn't hit him, they kept him in check. Penix never had this huge hole. He never had, you know, 26 seconds to throw the ball. You know, it was constant pressure all game. And I think that was a part of how they wound up keeping Penix in check, so to speak, you know?
They didn't sack him too many times, but they got enough pressure to not let the plays develop down the field.
He released it early.
A lot of them seemed to be play calls to release him early. And Michigan, like I said, did a great job of tackling in the open field there. You know, sure those 5 yard hits, 5 yard quick out to the wide receiver stayed at 5 yards. He didn't break a tackle and go for 15 or 20.
They were, because of that rushing the play, they play a zone, you know, so guys are going to find openings in the zone a lot, but you can't when you have to get rid of the ball in 1.8 seconds. It just doesn't happen that way. You can't sit down. You can't find the guy. The tight end wasn't as effective as he had been in the previous few weeks. His name is escaping me for something like that. Right now, I just can't think of his name. It's like a two-word. I can't think of it. It's not Hightower. It's over something. Whatever the hell it is. Westover. I knew it had over in it. And he was I knew it was two different words in one word. I couldn't think of how it was.
I looked it up. I didn't know off the top of my head.
No, I couldn't think off the top of my head. But Westover, who had been so effective in recent games, didn't have a chance to sit down. And that was like the big key to the whole operation. And again, Michigan played great. They deserved to be the title, win the title and be the champion. It wasn't as big a blowout as the final score would indicate. That's really only my major point.
Yeah, I agree. You did actually have Michigan down in our prediction.
I didn't want to be right. I didn't want to win my bet even. I did want to win my bet, but I didn't like – I was rooting for Washington. I just thought that Michigan was going to be a little too strong on the line of scrimmage, and it showed on both lines. I mean, I thought Washington's D played so much better after those first two initial runs, Kev. I thought, and Edwards, who had been invisible all year, all of a sudden, you're like, wow, now you see what all the excitement was last year about him. And then, you know, then they settled in. They found a way. Corum had one big run, then they settled down and could never get over the top. But congratulations. Hail to the victors.
Okay. One other point for college football. Today it came out that Nick Saban is retiring from Alabama after 17 years of coaching, 7 titles on his resume. He's out. He's retired. Darren, Kevin, any comments?
Well, 16 straight years of 10 wins or more. It's the most since 1936. Tells you he's been pretty effective. Back then they didn't play as many games, so it was actually much harder. But at the same point in time, the guy revolutionized the SEC, basically. He made it the power conference that it was. I mean, it was always really good battling with the other conferences. I just think that, you know, Nick, who did not have the success as an NFL coach in Cleveland and his only little chance up there, he did a great job at Alabama. He really found a way to make that the powerhouse it once was under Bear Bryant. And, it's a legendary coach that moves on. We'll see how that affects Alabama in the portal going forward. But it was I was a little surprised that I wasn't expecting it, Kev.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see who wants that job to follow up Saban. That's going to be the hard one. I'd almost rather wait till the coach after Saban.
Yeah, I'll come back in 3 years. I'll see you in three.
See you in three. Some of the early names I've heard, Lane Kiffin. Mm-hmm. He was an offensive coordinator under Saban for Alabama. He had a great year at Ole Miss. They finished 9th. The other name to watch out for, does Dabo have any interest in leaving Clemson? He's an Alabama native. He played for the Crimson Tide. You know, if he's going to leave Clemson, that seems to be the one job that may lure him away from Clemson. Sarkisian, another former assistant under Saban, he's down in Texas. So he may come back. Who knows? I mean, but that's the type of level that they're looking at. Maybe DeBoer from at Washington, if they want to take him. Yeah, some of these, I mean, they're going to get a big name. I mean, it's a big school. It's a prestigious school. It's probably one of the top two or three, you know, opportunities in the country.
Yeah, that's right. I think of Alabama, Notre Dame, Michigan. Maybe you throw in Ohio State. You know, I mean, those four seem to transcend the others to me at this point. Maybe yeah. Texas is five.
Texas has the money.
You know, A&M to an extent. But
Florida, yeah. Florida State, maybe, you know.
Maybe yeah, a quarter of a step behind. Level. Maybe a quarter of a step behind, G, but not by much. Georgia also. I mean, there's just certain, maybe a quarter step behind there. Just the Notre Dame prestige.
Yeah.
You know, the Michigan prestige, the Alabama prestige, they kind of stand a little bit of head and shoulders above a lot in Texas.
Those it'll be interesting if Harbaugh goes NFL if you have both Alabama and Michigan open in the same year.
We're going to find out what happens there. Someone's going to offer Harbaugh a lot of money yep. to go NFL, and he's already going to make a ton of money going college. So we'll see how it goes. But these guys that coach in college, it's not the same as it was, and you're seeing guys retire. And not that 72 is young, but you felt like Saban could probably go to 75, 76 without skipping a beat. But the transfer portal and the NIL and all the stuff really has a bunch of guys that have been in this for a long time not wanting to do it the same way anymore.
Yep.
Saban wants to coach. He wants to go out recruit to the point of, we're Alabama. Are you going to come here? That was his recruiting pitch, I think, half the time. We are Alabama. I'm Nick Saban. And that's enough. But now with the NIL and the transfer portal, does he want to deal with this anymore? I think that drives a lot of it.
I remember the old documentary on Bo Jackson, and he was from Bessemer, Alabama. He still is from Bessemer, Alabama. And there was a whole big thing where he ended up going to Auburn, but the day that Bear Bryant called the house, everybody came in and said, Bear Bryant called you on this phone? Alabama's Bear Bryant called you on this phone? That's what Alabama's prestige kind of has. He went to Auburn because Pat Dye said, you'll play right away, and Alabama didn't promise him that, and that's why he went there. But at the same point in time, the prestige of Alabama is like, it's elite. Jake?
Okay. All right, we're going to move to the NFL.
One last point on college, if I could. Just congratulations to the Jackrabbits of South Dakota State. Yep. They rolled over Montana 23-3. Montana turned the ball over three times, got stopped on downs three times. So South Dakota, even though the yardage was within 100 yards of each other, they were never really threatened. The Jackrabbits, they've taken over from North Dakota State as the new power of the FCS, I should say. And congrats for the FCS title to the South Dakota State Jackrabbits. Back to you, G.
All right. Week 18 in the books. We're going to go through all the playoff seedings. First, let's talk about we got two local teams that actually got wins this week. The Jets beat New England 17-3. They go to 7-10 on the year. Jets ended a 15-game losing streak to New England in what could be Belichick's last final game in New England. The snow and the wind were not conducive to throwing, as we saw. Both teams combined for 158 yards. Conversely, Breece Hall had 178 yards on the ground with a touchdown on 37 carries. Kev?
Yeah, you hit every point I had it written down there. Breece Hall, monster game, 37 for 178. You can tell it was the last game of the season, nothing to hold him back for, so let him go. Finished with 190 of the 254 total yard for the Jets. When you look at his overall season, he was fourth in the league in yards from scrimmage. Now there is a big gap, but the only three ahead of him, McCaffrey, CD Lamb, and Tyreek Hill. That shows you how good a season Hall had, and that's with a terrible offensive line and an atrocious quarterbacking play. Looking back, I mean, we'll talk about it during the offseason when we look ahead to the draft and all, but God, the three games you wish you had back. The first New England game, the 15-10 loss. The Raiders game, the 16-12, and the Atlanta game, 13-8. With all the problems they had this year, they were that close, 5-4 and 5 points. They're 14 points away from being a playoff team, which is unbelievable when you look at how bad the offense was all year.
You can shake your head, but record-wise, it would have been there. I know what you're saying, Gino. But I agree with 10-7.
I mean, if Aaron Rodgers was there, You hate to say it. They're probably a playoff team.
And I think if Trevor Siemian starts a couple more, they'd probably go 9-8. He's competent. He's not good, but he's competent. He doesn't turn it over as much.
If Tim Boyle doesn't start, we have at least one more win against Atlanta.
Yeah, I agree.
The positives, like Gino said, I don't care about the position. Whether they picked 8th or 10th in the first, I don't care. They beat New England. They broke the losing streak. They beat Belichick. And because of that, Belichick is now tied Dan Reeves and Jeff Fisher for the most regular season losses in NFL history. And he tied Tom Landry for the most overall playoff and regular season losses in NFL history by a head coach. So good for you, Belichick. And that's all I have to say about the Jets. Go ahead.
Well, I got a little insult to the Jets at all times because only this team, there's one team in the league that I know of that's done this twice. Brees could have had a 1,000-yard season, but because mathematicians on the sideline messed it up, he got 994. There's plenty of time to give him another 6 yards, but this team is so stupid they don't do it. Last time this happened with the Jets, I remember Freeman McNeil in the playoff game in 82 against Cincinnati. He has the record at 211 yards. No, one of those carries was by Bruce Harper, and he had 202. The record was 206. He got pulled early in the fourth quarter. They didn't need to do that. Only the Jets screw up opportunities to help their players set records or hit milestones. It's embarrassing. No other team ever has the problem. The Jets always have this stupid problem. Like I said before, I thought that that if Siemian would have played in the Atlanta game and maybe even in the Raider game, they could have won those games just because he does command the ball a little bit better back there. He's not good. I'm not calling him good. I don't want him back. I don't want him as my backup. I don't want him on the team. I don't want any of these guys on the team, but he is pretty good. You know, at least managing the game and not losing it on you, which is the key. The defense was incredible. 7 sacks. They held them to 6 first downs and 119 total. I mean, you know, 119 total yards. They were great. And to epitomize the Jets season, Ashton Davis gets the pick to seal the game, and he fumbles the ball right back. Just, and they got a pick on the next play. But that play by Ashton Davis, who's just gotten better, actually, over the course of his career. We thought he was a bust in the third round. He's not a star, but he can do a lot of little things for you. But that just epitomized the season.
It looked like in the snow, Sauce looked like he was trailing him, asking him to lateral him in the ball. I think that's what was
the Sauce. Yeah, so stupid. And then I figured Huff had a nice last game. I think that probably is his last game as a Jet. I can't see us having to spend the money on Huff.
Yep.
And he had 2 sacks to final to wrap it up. But overall, I don't care about the damn draft pick. The people that were crying, oh, we're picking 10th instead of 6th. I went through the laundry list of people. Last 2 times we picked 10th. Al Toon.
Tenth.
We had Al Toon and Wilson, Garrett Wilson. So we haven't been awful at the 10 spot. Before that was Russell Carter. But the last 2 were Toon and Wilson. So maybe it's a good spot for us. Who knows? We'll find out. Gee.
All right. The other New York team, the Giants, they got a win 27-10 against Philly. They moved to 6-11 for the season. That's how they finish up. This was a horrible Eagle game. Tyrod Taylor had 297 yards and a touchdown. Barkley had 2 touchdowns, plus he had 51 yards receiving. The Eagles, it's a late season collapse. They go 1-5 in their last 6, limping into the playoffs. They wound up in this 5 spot, had ample opportunities to grab the 2 and didn't. Giants walk out with a win, 27-10.
Darren? Wandale Robinson, when healthy, is a speedster and a difference maker on the offense. And Slayton, like I always say, they try to replace him all the time. You might as well just keep him in there because he makes big plays when he's in there. Tyrod got himself a new contract somewhere else, most likely, but he did guarantee himself that he'll get just below starter money somewhere to be a competent backup, which was really nice. The defense showed up strong. The defense played really well. Like I said last week, I've been picking on Dable a lot, but I got to give him credit. The team has not quit on him, and maybe he's doing a stronger job than I thought he was early. The one question I'm going to have for you guys, Sirianni, as this team tanks, Is there a chance he gets blown out if they lose to Tampa this week?
Yeah.
I think there is. I think there's a legit shot.
I would
in turmoil right now. Hurts played in this game. Jones,
Brown played, got hurt, but he played. He started.
Well, Brown played. Only Swift really didn't play of the starters.
Swift didn't play. Devonta Smith was hurt. AJ Brown wound up going out with an injury. Hurts was injured. He started. I agree. And listen, they're banged up all over the place. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. You came down the last six games and you were 1-5. Sirianni showed us nothing down the stretch here with this team. We couldn't get them back to do anything. And now they're going into the playoffs after this bad loss. They're now in the five spot. They're going to wind up playing Tampa Bay. We'll talk about it in a little while. But, you know, if he loses to Tampa Bay, yeah, I could see them making a change. Yeah.
415 yards of total offense by the Giants. I mean, it just tells you with the Giant offense doesn't put up 415 yards. I'm not trying to rip them to shreds, but they don't. And that's just an indictment on where this defense is at this point, too. Both Super Bowl teams from last year in trouble, Kev.
Yeah. From a Giant fan perspective, very similar to the Jets. They beat a team that's been haunting them not as long as the Jets with the Patriots. But the last couple of years here, the last 3 or 4 years, the Eagles have owned the Giants. So I think from a fan perspective, it's the same feeling. You finally beat the team in your division that you need to beat. Maybe cautious spot or two in the draft, but you know what? You still needed to go out there and win the game. Eagles finished behind the Cowboys. Here's the difference. Cowboys went 3-0 and dominated the Jets and the Giants. The Eagles went 1-2 against the Jets and Giants. You don't deserve to win the division if you go 1-2 against the Jets and Giants. I'm sorry.
No, you don't. You're 100% right.
Well, listen, the only thing with the Eagles is that the first, you know, the first 10 games, and the first 11 games and the last six games, it's two different teams right now. You know, this isn't the same team that you saw at the beginning of the year. Whether it's
you mean the one that injuries, the Jets beat,
guys beat up, however you want to call it. But you know, you started off the first 11, and now the last five, you're 1-5. You know, you wind up being 10-1, and then you wind up at 11-6. You know, it's a tale of two teams right now, and which one of these teams plays next week, this week, because that's really the key, right? Darren?
Yeah, my only point to that, the injuries happen to every team. And Cleveland played five starting quarterbacks this year. Okay?
Oh, I agree.
They're not crying about it. You know, no, I'm not talking about the Jets or the Giants, but you know, almost every playoff team has had a battle injuries of one point or another. I don't care that Devontae Smith didn't play their number two receiver because Hurts started and he banged himself up. But he was in there for a while trying to make plays and nothing happened. So I don't want to hear the injury thing because every team's injured. You know, Buffalo lost their three best defensive players throughout the course of the year.
It's not an excuse. It's just you saw a team go 10-1 in their first 11 and then 1-5. So what's the difference? What's the change?
They were winning close games, and now they're losing close games.
Okay. I mean, if that's what you want to go on, then that's it.
At no point did any of us say Philadelphia looks dominant, though. At no point during the season did any of us say Philadelphia looked dominant, even when they were 10-1.
Agreed.
We're like, oh, they're the best team in the league, but they didn't look dominant in the stretch.
I agree.
And that was mostly because of the defense, by the way. It wasn't the offense. It was mostly the defense.
We spent the whole year waiting for the first half of the year. We kept waiting for them to show that next gear, and they never hit it. And then once they hit some of the injuries, they never recovered.
Yeah,
the only team we said looked dominant throughout the year was San Francisco.
Yep.
Even when they were losing, we were like, well, this is the best team anyway.
Yep.
And I guess we were all privately rooting for Cincinnati because we all picked them to do well. And they fell apart. And even the Ravens, not until the last couple of weeks did we really feel like they were a legitimate one seed. But at no point besides record did we say Philadelphia was great. I mean, that's the thing. And it was all defense. The offense was clicking early. Nobody could cover either receiver, to be honest with you. Hurts looked like he had all day. All they talked about was how to ban the tush push. You know, that's all there was about the Eagles. And they would outscore you. And then when they can't outscore you, now what happens?
Yep. Yeah.
That's what it comes down to.
All right. So we're going to start off at the AFC. The one spot is Baltimore at 13-4. They lost to Pittsburgh, but they clinched the number one seed. They rested a ton of guys. The two spot winds up going to Buffalo at 11-6. They beat Miami 21-14 to win the AFC East, to win the number two seed. Big play in that game was the punt return for the touchdown. Kev?
Yeah, well, the first half, I mean, Buffalo dominated most of the game. The first half, they were three times in the red zone and got no points for Buffalo. I mean, that very easily could have been, you know, 17 points in the first half, you know, if they make a couple plays there. I mean, the one before the half, you know, where they get it inbounds and get tackled at the two, I thought that was right out of the Jet playbook. Coming into the playoffs here, and I think we'll talk about it during the previews here, but when you watch Tua throw the ball, he's going to have a lot of trouble in Kansas City. He throws those lollipops up there, and especially at the end of the game there, you saw the one to Hill, the next to last play of the game. I felt like, you know, Hill was open, and it felt like it was one of those two lollipops that just took forever. Hill absorbs a big hit, comes up. He's already been hobbling around a bit lately, the last couple of weeks, but he came up looking real sore on that one. And then the last interception, I thought, was a badly thrown ball that just seemed to float out there and gave the defender a chance to make the play. Darren?
Yeah, he never plays well in cold weather, neither do the Dolphins, for that matter. But the one thing you looked at, you pointed out, Kev, the amount of turnovers that Buffalo commits in crucial spots is amazing. Whether it's a turnover on downs, getting stopped before the half, or throwing picks in the end zone, this team, I mean, and listen, the fourth and two, he threw it up. All right, I got him a pass on that one because nothing was going to happen there. The first one, you know, I mean, you can't do that. You can't get tackled inside the two on that pass. And McDermott came out and just ripped him. Basically, the halftime interview, it was like, well, that play can't happen. That ball's got to be in the end zone. That's a shot at the quarterback right there.
Yeah.
Tua was subpar at best. He didn't even reach 200 yards. Buffalo's playing without any starting cornerbacks in this game. And, you know, Hill still has 13 targets, but only caught seven passes for under 100 yards. I mean, listen, Hill makes the team go, and they got to find a way to get him the ball, whether it's sweeps, whether it's screens, whatever. And if Waddle comes back and plays, it'll certainly help them out. But that cold weather and throwing the ball down the field is going to be a real challenge for Tua. It's supposed to be the coldest game on record for both of these squads. It's supposed to be like 0 degrees or 2 degrees. And we'll get into that preview later. But, yeah, Buffalo just the much better team in this game. And it took a punt return to kind of have them win this game. So,
yeah.
You know, Miami hung around, but they had a lot of injuries.
All right. The three spot is Kansas City. They beat the Chargers 13-12. They didn't move there at the three spot. Darren?
No, just the only thing. Chris Jones gets the sack for $1.25 million. And, you know, he had to get 10 sacks. He came into the game at 9.5. He played until he got the sack. It's just cool that all the teammates are all excited. They were mobbing him like he just won the lottery. It was like a which he basically did. But you know, it's still you know, one of those cool moments, I thought.
Okay, the four spot goes to Houston at 10-7. They win the AFC South on Saturday. They beat Indianapolis 23-19. This combined with the Jacksonville loss to Tennessee on Sunday gives them the AFC South. It gives them the four slot. Guys, Houston?
One thing that was really interesting, I think it was – it Herb Street doing this game? I think it was Herb Street. I'm not 100% sure.
I believe so, yeah.
But it was so. – so Taylor had a great game, and he was gashing him. And all of a sudden he makes a run, and one of the defensive players on Houston gets hurt. I can't remember which player it was. And he's like, now they have to reestablish the momentum to get the running game back and running again. It might have been Aikman. I don't remember who it was. And all of a sudden, they started to slow down on that run a little bit. You know, Houston, it kind of turned the game around. The one thing I'll say is Goodson, that drop at the end, ball's a little bit behind him. But Minshew to Goodson, where, you know, they would have gotten that first down. And unfortunately, because of you know, the drop of the ball just being a little off, Goodson was inconsolable after the game, saying that I'm going to go home because the only people that don't want me dead right now are my parents. I felt awful for this kid off of that drop. He was so devastated by it. You know, you got to say, you can only say, it was Aikman. I'm sorry. I had it in my notes. Nico Collins was amazing. Stroud was great. You know, even without those other two wide receiver weapons really being a factor, I just, you know, Houston just, you know, they've impressed us all year long. We saw him against the Jets, and it looked like we held him in check. So it's really hard to watch him and think this team is really good. But when they get things clicking on offense, they get things clicking on offense. And congratulations to DeMeco Ryans and C.J. Stroud, a rookie coach, rookie quarterback, getting into the playoffs and winning the division. Not on their own. I mean, Jacksonville had to choke it away, but nonetheless, they still won it. Kev?
And speaking of the Jacksonville, you know, Lawrence, terrible fourth quarter there. I mean, that fourth down, the quarterback sneak he tried, you know, he's done that before where he tries to, you know, jump up and reach the ball over. He was too far away. I mean, he was almost back at the 2 yard line on the snap. It was too far to do that play. And then the fourth down, you know, there's under a minute 50 left, but there was no chance of completing that ball on fourth and two. I mean, I didn't think he was under enough pressure where he had to get rid of the ball that second, that instant. I thought he had a little bit more time to look for somebody else. You know, Lawrence did not step up big at all. Jacksonville's another team that collapsed down the stretch here. And Tennessee pulled out a big win for them, even though it didn't save Vrabel's job.
Which surprised me. I'm going to read you a quarterback comparison. I'm not going to give you the names, okay?
Yep.
Quarterback one has a record over his first three NFL seasons of 20-30. Quarterback two has a record of 18-24. Quarterback one has an 85% pass rating, and quarterback two has an 85.8 passer rating. Quarterback one, 58 touchdowns, 39 picks. Quarterback two, 46 touchdowns, 36 picks. Quarterback one, 63.8% completion percentage. Quarterback two, 66.1 completion percentage. Quarterback one averages 235.4 yards passing per game. Quarterback two, 212.3 yards passing per game. Quarterback one, a 6.7 yard per attempt. Quarterback two, 6.8 yards per attempt. Can you tell me who these two quarterbacks are in their first 3 years?
One's got to be Lawrence.
That's quarterback one.
Trying to think who else came out that year.
Not that drama isn't great for a podcast.
It's 18, Mac Jones.
Wow. The stats are eerily similar, okay? Wow. Now, I'm not trying to say that Mac Jones is as good as Trevor Lawrence, but let's be honest here about something. Trevor Lawrence has been anointed because we loved him in college, and everybody did. And he had a pretty good run in his second year to get them into the playoffs. I'm not going to say he didn't, but he has not been that good. His stats are eerily similar to Mac Jones.
Wow.
Who New England can't wait to run out of town. Yeah. So I'm not saying, again, everybody's all upset. We got Zach Wilson with the two, and we didn't get Lawrence. I would have loved to have gotten Lawrence too. Don't get me wrong, but so far he's got a lot to prove still as a quarterback. And you see how eerily similar it is to Mac Jones. It's freaky, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway,
and then with that Jacksonville loss that clinched the Steelers into the playoffs, and that clinched Buffalo making the playoffs, made that Sunday night game just for the division title. It wasn't do or die for Buffalo. Took a little bit of the steam out of that Buffalo-Miami game. Just a little bit.
And just to touch on Pittsburgh for a second, does Tomlin never finds a way not to make that team competitive? They get into the playoffs again. They were dead a couple weeks ago. Yeah. Dead. We were like, oh, the winning record streak's over. There's no way. No way. And then he comes out and wins his last three. You can't even argue with him. Maybe just
behind guy Mason finds Rudolph. A way with
Mason Rudolph, who went 18 for 20 in that game, by the way.
Yeah.
Against a Baltimore team that wasn't playing every starter on defense, but played enough. He was 18 for 20.
They also didn't play their offense, though. I mean, they rested a ton of guys. Listen,
I agree with you on that. I agree with you on them resting a lot of guys, but they played the running backs, but they did not play the quarterback.
Yeah. All right. So Houston's the four. The five is Cleveland. They lost to Cincinnati, but they rested most of the time.
Nobody.
They were locked into the five.
Yeah, but Jeff Driscoll starting there?
Yep.
Fifth starting quarterback of the season.
Yeah.
And this team's a playoff team. That's how good that defense is.
The sixth spot was Miami. We talked about them. They lost to Buffalo. The seventh spot is Pittsburgh. They beat Baltimore 17-10 on Saturday. Oof. A lot happened when Jacksonville lost. Let me tell you, everybody was jumping around. I got news for you. Pittsburgh was a very happy place, but Pittsburgh gets in. Tomlin, unbelievable, Darren. It really is.
He really does. Every time, him and Pete Carroll seem to always try to find a way to get really close. Pete didn't quite make it, and we'll talk more about him later. And but Tomlin got in.
Okay. NFC, a little bit easier, but we'll go through it. San Francisco is the one seed. They lost to the Rams, but it's a meaningless game for both teams. No seeding changes occurred because of it. They end the season at 12-5.
Dallas fumbles at the end. Another Jet gets it, makes a big play in another game.
Dallas secured the two seed with a 38-10 thrashing of Washington. Detroit.
Well, Aubrey misses his first field goal on the block in the entire season.
Yep.
And then he missed the second one. He shanked the second one. He hit the upright? I think he hit the upright. I don't remember.
But, you know, looked a little shaky there for a moment there in the first quarter. They were down 10-7, and then the Cowboys said, oh, that's right. This is Washington we're playing. We're supposed to kick their you-know-whats, and it was 21-10 at halftime, and they cruised.
Washington can't cover. That's what it comes down to. They can't play in the defensive backfield very well.
Okay, Detroit is the three seed. They beat Minnesota 30-10. Big thing in that game was they lost Sam Laporta to an injury. Don't know if he's going to be playing this week. Don't know if he will play if they actually do make it to the next round. Darren?
Yeah, I mean, they played everybody. The complete opposite of what a lot of teams did. And then Laporta got hurt. Khalif Raymond got hurt, who's a big returner for them. Jameson Williams is back in practice. So that would offset a little bit of the Raymond thing. But Laporta had such a monster year that this is going to be a blow. And we skipped this in the Pittsburgh game. TJ Watt getting hurt.
Yeah.
Major blow. He won't play this week against Buffalo. And that's a major blow for them. If Detroit doesn't have Laporta, you know, and we're going to get into it, but this matchup has a bunch of great skill players all over the field this weekend. And, you know, to lose Laporta will be a major blow for Detroit, in my opinion. But they played everybody, and I got to be honest, I didn't have a problem with it. Of course, Laporta gets hurt, and that's the reason why you don't play everybody. So there's two schools of thought. I like when you play for a half or whatever. But, you know, anyway, they kept all their starters in the whole game to make sure they won the Minnesota game.
Okay, Tampa Bay is the four seed. They beat Carolina 9-0. You can tell Baker's hurt. He's playing through it. He gets the win. They did enough to clinch the NFC South. Darren?
Never has a team backed in any easier than Tampa Bay did in this game. Sharks about to score a touchdown. He fumbles it through the end zone. Then they have another long run, and they call it back on an illegal formation. That had nothing to do with the play. They missed a field goal. Tampa Bay did nothing against a useless Carolina team. Carolina had two touchdowns called back. One touchdown called back, one fumble through the end zone for no reason. Just you got to hold the ball there. Carolina should have beaten them. Be honest, we'd have a better playoff game. We'd have Philly going into New Orleans. Well, I don't think they'd even have a shot. I think New Orleans will wipe the floor with them this week because New Orleans proved to be the much better team, and we'll get to them in a few seconds because they did something this week.
We will.
But, oh, my God, Tampa Bay did nothing in this game. They got three field goals. Baker's not good. I don't know if he's hurt, not hurt. I don't care. He's never been good. He's not good now.
We've been saying it all season. It's Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, and you never know which one you're going to get. We've been saying this all season.
Baker looks good one week and terrible the next.
Yeah, that's it. All right, number five seed is Philadelphia. They played a horrible game. They lost to the Giants. We talked about that. The sixth slot is the Rams. They finish at 10-7. They beat San Francisco 21-20. Again, two teams that played but weren't going full speed. A lot of guys rested. Darren, you wanted to make a point. We're going to get there.
Them playing Detroit, but Carson Wentz.
We got that.
You know, I like the fact that these teams go for two. They're not playing for overtime in these spots. It doesn't matter. And Wentz was, I think it's a good signing for them in case something happens to Stafford. You have a capable backup. Not that Wentz is great, but, you know, he can lead a team and do something.
We wanted him.
Well, I would have loved it. I think we would have been a playoff team if we got Wentz. But that's one man's opinion.
And the seventh spot goes to Green Bay. They finished 9-8. They beat Chicago 17-9 to secure the seventh seed. Any comments about Green Bay?
Well, Aaron Jones back, and he looked really, really good. Love 27 for 32. And what Chicago showed us, what Fields showed us is that, you know, maybe it's fool's gold. It's hard to imagine them not going for Caleb Williams after watching this game. But to say that, you know, mostly because of the reset and starting all over again, rather than having to pay that second contract out, you pay that rookie contract and you know you have him for 4 years at least and fifth if you take the option. So I think it just gives you that reset and you're able to – you have all these other assets. Eberflus is coming back, you know, so they announced that today. But, you know, right now Green Bay, if there's a team that's improved from beginning of the year to the end of the year any more than Green Bay has, I don't know who it is. They look dynamic on offense. Love looks like he's got the whole offense down. The defense has gotten better. You know, I feel bad they have a really tough matchup having to go to Dallas, but they're good.
Okay.
But real All quick right. on Chicago, though, with Fields, what did Daniel Jones get from the Giants?
He got $40 million a year for basically he's got $40 million a year, but only 2 years kind of guaranteed.
I mean, Fields is probably looking at a very similar type of contract right now. And, you know, if you're Chicago, you don't know if he's worth it. And that's the problem. If you don't know if he's worth it by now, you've got to trade him and, like I said, take Williams number one. But that's a discussion for
the off-season. You know,
off-season.
Okay,
one last point on the Giants. Just before I know we're going to get to the firings, but their defensive coordinator gone, Martindale, too.
One other NFC game to mention, and that is New Orleans beat Atlanta 48-17. Do you want to talk about the game itself, or do you want to talk about the last?
I just got one thing to talk about. So it's New Orleans goes into victory formation. Coach sends in the little kneel down. Jameis Winston says no, hands it off because he wants to give Jamal Williams a touchdown. And Arthur Smith loses his mind. After the game. And to be honest, you know what? In the NFL, if you want to line up and go for the touchdown, go for it. But when you're in victory formation, it's almost like an assumption that, okay, we're not going to do anything. You don't do anything, this, that, and the other thing. I thought it broke a little bit of a rule. I wasn't impressed by the move by Jameis Winston. I'll be surprised if New Orleans doesn't make a coaching change. There is no way that they could keep Jameis Winston on this team after that, you know, insubordinate move, in my opinion. He would have to go. Kev, any thoughts?
Yeah, that's something that you've seen in movies.
Yeah.
Go against the coach, defy the coach's orders. Like I said, you know, when you line up victory formation, the defense is okay. We're done. Yep. And she gave him the cheap touchdown. I mean, like I said, they changed the play in the huddle and came out in a formation, you know, an I formation or pistol or whatever they want to run down there. It's a different story.
I agree.
They're all getting paid.
And Alan, after the game, said, "Look, I apologize to Arthur Smith. This is not how we play. This is not how we coach it." Threw Winston under the bus totally, which I thought he should have.
Well, I mean, he was right to do it, in my opinion.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. That's the end of the recap. But speaking of Arthur Smith, he joined the list of coaches that were fired this week. We had Arthur Smith fired in Atlanta. We had Ron Rivera fired in Washington. We had Tennessee firing Mike Vrabel, Seattle firing Pete Carroll, although he's going to stay with the organization in some kind of advisor role. And the other one that came out of the New York area was Wink Martindale, who resigned. And from what we hear, it was after Brian Daboll fired most of his assistants.
Well, his right-hand guy and his brother. Yep. So they fired Mitchell and his brother. And basically knowing that Martindale would then quit because he's a hothead about it. You know,
he got two hotheads there.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. He did this to get rid of Wink, who has done a pretty good job as the Giant defensive coordinator. That's not a defense that's loaded with a lot of huge names. I mean, Dexter Lawrence is a great player. And, you know, Okereke came in and had a solid year. He played two rookie cornerbacks most of the way. And, you know, basically these two have not gotten along, and Dable wanted him out, and so did Shane, and they found a way to do it. And that's what happened. And he was let go, and this will be a little battle that we'll hear about a lot, as Wink is not one to mince words, and I'm sure Dable will say his piece, and we'll see how it all turns out. But, yeah, a little crazy.
Any comments from you guys about any of the coaches that were fired or any of the open slots that are going to be available now as a result of all this?
Well, Vrabel being fired was the most stunning to me because, again, he won a game this weekend, and I know that this team has not been good, but the record this guy has put forth with never having a quarterback, I mean, Tannehill being his quarterback who's been adequate at best. I know he had a couple of good years, but they were really because they were just relying on the running game and physicality. I fear that he ends up in New England and starts beating us up there to kind of cover both points. Not that that job is open yet, but I believe it will be.
That's my fear.
I wish he would make his way down I-95 to Washington. Let me tell you, I'd love him over there coaching my Commanders.
I agree with you. I think it'd be a great hire if you can get him.
Okay, so we're going to go right into a little NFL. So this week's games. So we'll start it off with Saturday. Cleveland is at Houston. Miami's at Kansas City. Cleveland is a 3-point favorite. Kansas City is a 3.5-point favorite. One thing you mentioned, Darren, when we were talking about Miami, they actually brought in a couple of defensive players this week because they're so banged up. They signed Justin Thomas and they signed
Justin Houston
and Bruce Irvin this week because they're so banged up and had nobody there.
They lost Baker and they lost Van Ginkle last week.
And as you talked about it, it is going to be one of the coldest games in the history of the NFL. It is going to be just a sight to see. We'll get into it. It's on Peacock, by the way, which is another disaster of a story. But
that's just the dumbest thing in the NFL ever.
It is one of the ultimate money grabs by the NFL, that's for sure.
Because they're so desperate for money, the NFL.
I know. Yeah. I know. All right, so first game up on the board is Cleveland at Houston. Cleveland's a 3-point favorite. Who do you guys like?
You want to kick it off, Kev, or you want me to? Go ahead.
Like you said, Houston's had a terrific year. DeMeco Ryan and Mark and C.J. Stroud have done phenomenal being rookie coach, rookie QB. I think they reached the playoffs even a year earlier, maybe a year or two early than everybody thought they would. Flacco has played really well down the stretch here for Cleveland. We know how good Cleveland's defense is. It's 3 points. Cleveland had a chance to rest everybody last week. And I think Cleveland comes out and really puts the screws to Stroud, keeps him contained. I think Cleveland wins this game probably even by 10 points.
I hate to agree with you, Mr. Kevin, but Flacco's throwing had 4 straight games with 300 yards. They played just a couple of weeks back in Houston, and Cleveland won 36-22 in a game that wasn't that close. Houston kind of put up points late. I just think Cleveland's O-line play and defense combined are a little too much. And I think that Houston, you know, Will Anderson's banged up on that D-line and may not be 100% going into this game. I think that they can match up with Nico Collins, especially since there is no Tank Dell on the other side. And I think that Cleveland wins the game by at least a touchdown. So I'll take Cleveland minus the points. G?
I agree with both of you guys. I think it's Cleveland by a touchdown. I think the defense leads the way for Cleveland. Flacco puts up some points. Cleveland runs away with this game, I think. The second game is Miami at Kansas City. Kansas City is a 3.5-point favorite. We already talked about this, one of the coldest games in NFL history it will be. Big wind chill. It's going to be a little nutty out there. Kev?
Yeah, I'm still pissed that this game is on Peacock. I've got less of a problem with the Amazon Prime package because a lot of people have Amazon Prime because of the shopping. Yep. And then I think as a bonus
that's why I have
the
it.
NFL. That's why my family has it. My wife loves Amazon Prime, and once we found out, oh, I'm a Prime member, then I go, oh, great, now I've got the Thursday night game. Mm-hmm. To go out and spend money to try to subscribe to and then cancel Peacock after the game. No, it's not worth it to me. That being said, Miami this year against playoff teams is 1-5 and have a negative 91 point differential. Kansas City is only 1-4, but they've lost their four games by 16 points to playoff teams. So they've been very competitive that way. Kansas City beat Miami in Europe much earlier in the year. Lots of defensive starters out for Miami. Like I said, the two injuries last week.
Van Ginkel and Baker.
Yep, and then the weekend before against the Jets.
Oh, they lost.
Bradley Chubb.
They lost Chubb.
So lots of issues there. Tua in the cold weather. I'm taking the Chiefs minus the 3.5.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in the same boat. Sorry, Kev. No. It's going to be really cold and windy. These two teams met earlier. It was 21-14. Shane is the big difference from that game, by the way. He did not play in the opener. Waddle could be back this week. The problem is that I don't think Tua is going to be able to throw the ball as effectively in this weather. Kansas City's defense has been the better defense all year, and it's been a really good defense. I think because they have a better O-line and because they have a healthier defense, I think Kansas City wins the game by Pacheco having a solid game and controlling the ball and Mahomes being able to throw it when he needs to. And without linebackers being able to really cover Kelsey or be aware of how to cover Kelsey because they're not regular starters, I think it does benefit the Chiefs. I'll take the Chiefs minus the points. G?
All right, I'm going to go against both of you guys, and I'm going to take Miami plus the points in this game. I'm going to tell you right now, the under over is 44. I like the over. I think Miami and Kansas City are going to run the hell out of the ball on each other. I think they're going to put up 25, 30 points apiece. Game's going to be in the 50s or 60s. And I think Miami winds up winning this game by 10. I think between A-Chain and Mostert, they have four touchdowns combined. They got to run all over Kansas City. I know Kansas City's got a better defense, but you know what? We've seen this all year with Kansas City. They go up and down. We don't know how they're going to play consistently. They haven't played consistently on offense with this group. I'm taking Miami plus the points.
There are going to be a lot of people getting hurt in this game. A lot of hard hits on that frozen ground. Yep. And you're going to see guys that come in a little bit gimpy that are going to leave a lot gimpy. And this game's going to be a long game for the amount of stoppages, in my opinion, I think.
I agree. All right. This first Sunday game is at 1:00. Pittsburgh is at Buffalo. Buffalo is a 10-point favorite. Kev.
Steelers have played much better lately. They've won the last three, or they've played much better the last three with Mason Rudolph as a quarterback. And the difference in the points, huge difference when they handed Faulkner and Sullivan the offensive coordinator and play-calling responsibilities. Buffalo comes in banged up on defense. They're doing enough to win. But I think the Steelers, you know, this is going to be another cold weather game. Not quite as cold as the Chiefs Dolphins, but it's still going to be cold weather. Maybe some snow if it gets in there a little early. Good, tough, hard-nosed type of game. The TJ Watt injury hurts the Steelers a lot, but I think the Steelers do enough to cover the 10-point spread. I think Buffalo wins by maybe a touchdown, but the Steelers cover the 10.
Let's mix the rotation up. You go, G.
I actually agree exactly with Kevin. I think Buffalo winds up winning this game, but I think it's like a 7-point game. I like Pittsburgh plus the points. Again, I think the way Buffalo has played, they get these wins, but they don't look great at the end of these games. It's a 7-10-point game. I like Pittsburgh plus the 10. Darren?
I'm with you guys. I hate it, you know, but Gabe Davis probably not playing. Rasul Douglas maybe not playing at corner. I think that's enough to keep the game close. I think that because of that, they're not going to be able to jam the line because they're not going to have the cornerback play to sit there and not play a bit of a zone and a little help for the corners being banged up on Buffalo. I think because of that, Harrison Warren could have a good game. Pittsburgh might even win this game. I think it's that close a game. I don't think it's just an 8-9 point win. I think Pittsburgh will be in this game till the end. I think Buffalo will prevail by 3. I think it's going to be a really close game.
Okay. All right. Second game on Sunday is Green Bay at Dallas. Dallas is a 7.5-point favorite. You want to change the order up?
Yeah, go ahead, G. Oh, me? Okay. Dallas has been great at home, except for that Lion game. They've really been outstanding. Green Bay's peaking at the right time. Love has improved tremendously. Watson could be back, Christian Watson, this week. Aaron Jones seems to be rounding into form. But I think CeeDee Lamb and Prescott have been incredible at home. And I think Dallas pulls away and covers this game. I think Dallas wins by two scores. Spread, I think, about 7.5, 8, something like that.
7.5.
Yeah, I'm taking Dallas to win by at least 10.
And I agree with you. Dallas minus 7.5 is Geno's pick. I think this is not a 14-point game. I think this is a 17-point game.
Kevin, I believe you're gonna agree with us because he just shook his head.
I'm gonna agree. The Packers are the youngest team in the playoffs. So I think, you know, taking a step up into the playoffs, like I said, the Cowboys have been great at home. They put up points at home. And I'm going to – same as that quote you had, Darren, Dallas pulls away late. They win this game by 2 touchdowns, if not maybe 17. But, you know, we're all in agreement in that type of spread.
Yep. Scary. Okay, last game on Sunday is the Rams at the Lions. The Lions are a 3.5-point favorite. Kev, why don't you start this one? To me, this is the game of the weekend, by the way.
Who's the favorite?
Detroit minus 3.5.
Okay, I thought you said Rams 3.5. Nope. Okay.
No.
I had the Rams plus 3. Okay. Of course, the big storyline, Stafford versus Goff, facing off against each other, against their former teams. To me, we know both teams can put up points. I think the Laporta injury is huge for Detroit. I think that takes away Goff's security blanket. The Rams' defense is better than Detroit's defense, so I think the Rams have a better chance of slowing down Detroit in general. So the Rams, you know, especially with Nacua and with Kupp back healthy, you know, Stafford's got that passing game going. Williams had a great year running the ball. I think they were so well balanced offensively, they should be able to put up points and beat Detroit that way. So I've got the Rams pulling the upset.
Okay, Darren?
Damn it, Kevin.
We think alike too much.
Well, the problem is that I also agree about the Laporta injury. I also the thing about the Detroit is, again, I think Campbell's going to be a little aggressive in a bad spot against a good team. I think that both teams can run the ball. Detroit has a little bit of a faster back in Gibbs. But Williams has been outstanding down the stretch. Those receivers are great. The one advantage Detroit has in this game is their O-line is better than the Rams' O-line. And if they can keep Goff from being pressured, especially up the middle by a guy named Aaron Donald, he's getting older and doesn't always do it in every single game, but in a big spot might rise to the occasion. That's where I give Detroit a shot. But I think the Rams win the game. I think the Rams win it by a touchdown. This I've been talking about this matchup for 3 weeks, guys. You know it. I've been bringing it up every week on the show.
Yep.
So right now, these two teams would play, and how cool would it be? And they made it the Sunday primetime game because they thought it was cool too. And I think that we have a great matchup. I think it's going to be a lot of points, and I think that the Rams prevail. G?
I like Detroit in this game. They got 12 wins. They got 12 wins on the season for a reason. Laporta was a big part, and it's a big loss to them. But I think Goff plays well between Jahmyr Gibbs and what's his name, the other running back?
Montgomery,
they have plenty of firepower. I think they wind up putting points up on the board. I could see this being like 30-20, 30-23. Detroit, you know, maybe a late touchdown. They pull ahead with this one. I'm taking Detroit minus 3.5. And the last game. The Monday night game.
So stupid.
Philadelphia is at Tampa Bay. Philadelphia is a 3-point favorite. Kev, why don't you start it?
I have no idea what to expect in this game. You know, the Buccaneers and Baker Mayfield can look great 1 week and look awful the next week. But Philly, we know, has been awful the last 6 weeks, finishing 1-5. This was a total coin flip. Maybe Darren and I'll be different this game for no other reason than I have no idea what I'm doing in this game. I'm going to take the Buccaneers plus the 3 points.
Damn it, Kevin. Baker sucks. And I think Tampa Bay wins because their defense is better than Philly's. That's the only reason. Their offense, I mean, listen, Philly could put up points. I do think that, but I also think Mike Evans is a nightmare for them to cover in this game. I think Godwin's a nightmare for them to cover in this game. I think Otten's a nightmare for them to cover in this game. They just have not played defense at all season long. And as much as I think Baker Mayfield's a poser and he's not a starter in the NFL, I think Tampa Bay stuns us all and robs us of a good second-round game somewhere and wins this game. And it would have been Philly and Dallas for a third time. Will now be Tampa at Dallas because the Rams will end up going to San Francisco, which would be like that's the way I see this going. So yep. I see Cleveland heading to Baltimore where Flacco goes home. I see Kansas City heading to Buffalo to reverse where they always play. I see Tampa ruining what would be a great weekend next weekend. And I see the Rams and the 49ers. G?
I am taking Philadelphia minus the three.
Thank God.
Different than us.
No, he's right, though. He's probably going to win.
Philadelphia has not looked good. I can't deny it. Whether it's injuries or not, doesn't matter. They have not looked good at all the last 6 weeks. However, Tampa Bay finished 9-8 and barely got in on a 9-0 win this week. It's good Baker, bad Baker. And Baker's hurt, by the way. I think Philadelphia wins this. I don't think this is a blowout in any way, shape, or form. I think this is close. Like, I don't know, Philadelphia with a field goal lead, a touchdown lead. They make it 10 points. I think Philadelphia winds up winning this game. I'm going to say it's 23-10 or something. I don't think Tampa Bay winds up putting a lot of points up on the board. And I do think Swift has a really good game this week. So those are the picks for the Super Wild Card Week.
A couple of last NFL points before we move on, if that's all right, boys.
Nope.
Quote from a Jet player. For the fans, you are an incredible fan base. You really are, and I have nothing but love and respect for you as a whole and also for your opinions. They matter. They're important. We hear you. We want it just as badly as you do, and I ask that you show up with the same energy that you showed up for on September 11, 2023 and 2024, and we'll take care of the rest. You know who said that?
No.
Aaron Rodgers. Now we're going to get you to the dumbest quote of the week. 7-10 should be good enough in this league. In my mind, this is a playoff team. I mean, just look how many touches I saved Bijan this year. I was saving those for our playoff run. Instead of adding week 18 to the regular season, we should consider an 8th playoff team first. Arthur Smith. If you drafted Bijan Robinson, right now you want to kick Arthur Smith in the teeth. I just can't believe that was a quote. I just wanted to read them both. And the third one. Legendary football coach Lou Holtz, okay, was asked to describe the difference between football players today and those of 50 years ago. He answered, simple. Today's athletes talk about rights and privileges, and the players 50 years ago talked about obligations and responsibilities. Those are my three football quotes, and we can move on. Jake?
I have one other football thing. Arthur Smith is out in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
Bijan Robinson is number 2 in the league in rushing next year, just right off the bat.
I can certainly see that as you being 100% correct.
Okay.
I'm 90% sure you're going to be 100% right.
Breece Hall may not be too far behind that, but McCaffrey's 1, and I think next year we wind up seeing Bijan at number 2. Okay.
One last point. I'm sorry. I meant to say this. AFC Super Bowl history, okay? So the Chiefs won, obviously, last year in 23, okay? And the Ravens won in 13. The Steelers won in 9, in 09. The Dolphins last won in 74. And the other three teams have never won the Super Bowl. So, you know, it's pretty wide open. Only the Chiefs have any recent history success winning the Super Bowl. So the AFC is very wide open, in my opinion.
Okay, and next week I'll go through what we have predicted, over-unders. I'll go through all that stuff next week when we have a little bit more time to the NFL.
Sounds good.
We'll get to a little Major League Baseball.
Sure.
So I'll run through a couple of things. San Francisco trades for Robbie Ray. They deal Haniger and DeSclafani. Mets sign Sean Manaea. Teoscar Hernandez signs with the Dodgers. By the way, it's $23.5 million, and $8.5 million is deferred from the year 2030 to 2039. And Shota Imanaga signed with Chicago. It's a 4-year for $53 million. And by the way, Michael Brantley retired this week.
And the one thing about Robbie Ray, it's very rare you see a pitcher get traded for that's coming off Tommy John that won't be healthy until the middle of the year at earliest. Yep. So, you know, obviously San Francisco, you know, sees something there. And they want him for the stretch run down at the end of the year, I guess. But I was a little surprised at what they gave up for him. Not that DeSclafani is a great player or anything like that. I just was surprised that you trade for a guy coming off the injury, not even throwing at this point.
Yeah.
Any other
baseball? What do you think of the Mets' point this what they were reported that they're only going to make a couple of bullpen moves and they're pretty much done, Kev? What were your thoughts on that?
Well, they brought in, you know, 8,000 bad relievers on these minor league deals with invites. They still need to go out. God, they still need bullpen help so desperately. They could use another starter. I mean, Manaea.
You know, I'm not a fan.
3 years ago, we thought, it, you know, hey, if you told me 3 years ago, hey, we're getting Manaea 3 years ago, I was, oh, okay. He hasn't been that good lately. But it's funny,
not in years.
Was it?
Not in years. He hasn't been good in years.
I was going to say 3 years ago, before you, well, pre-COVID, you know, everything gets skewed with COVID. I don't know. They still need so many bullpen pieces. It's Diaz and Raleigh and
G. Do you want Stroman, G?
Sure.
Okay. Here's the question: either of you guys want Bauer on your team?
I think.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Despite everything that's going on, I think you'd have to sit there and win the fan base over by ensuring that he would go for counseling. I think you'd have to do a lot of things. But I think he's a cheap option of a guy that has an incredible upside. And as a Yankee fan, I would take a chance on Bauer as, you know,
the 1 year
women hearing me contract. Say this might want me shot, but I would take a shot on Bauer because I think he's got the opportunity to be a 3 or a 4. But more importantly, Gino, I want Hader still. I don't know why we don't have him yet.
I agree. All right. NBA, Kev?
Yeah, a couple of quick points. Maybe I should try to post it up on our Facebook page. Did you see the great clip from the Raptors coach, Darko Radjakovic, last night?
I did.
He was going off on the referee. So they lost to the Lakers last night, 132-131. The fourth quarter, free throws, Lakers 23, Raptors 2. And he went off on the officiating, and he basically called them out and said, you know what, I know the Lakers were supposed to win the game last night, and if, you know what, if they're supposed to win the game, fine. Just tell us beforehand so we don't even have to bother showing up and playing. We'll take the forfeit and save our guys from having to play. I mean, this was absolutely ridiculous to be 23-2 in the fourth quarter. When he was talking about Scottie Barnes taking it to the hole every play because he's taking it strong to the hole and not flopping. I think that's a little dig at somebody on the Lakers.
I wonder who.
He's not getting any calls. And, you know, to me, when the free throws were even pretty much through three quarters and it's 23-2 in the fourth quarter in a one-point game, he's got a great point there.
You also called Scottie Barnes the next big
face. Well, the next face of the NBA, Scottie Barnes. Well, that might be stretching it a little bit.
I think he's going to be a really good player, though. I don't think he's at that level, though.
Yeah.
I'll take him over
Jaylen Brown. Tell your son that. Anyway.
Morant out for the season. It's getting shoulder surgery. So short-lived was about 6 or 8 games.
Nine. 9 games he played.
They're so far out of it, they might as well.
Yeah. Spoelstra, 8 years, $120
million. Yeah.
Sets the record for coaches, I believe. He's and the Knicks, since the trade, 5-0 with OG.
And
Anobi. And Achua. I'm sticking with OG. I can say OG.
OG. Very good.
Any other NBA points, guys?
I don't know if he's been good. I mean, listen, he plays defense. He's efficient as an offensive player. He doesn't take too many shots. Doesn't need the ball in his hands at all times. And I think that's something that the Knicks needed. And, you know, listen, RJ Barrett and Quickley have both been good as well in Toronto. It's not like this could actually be a trade that's good for both teams. Almost like the Sacramento Indiana trade last year with Halliburton for Sabonis. It's worked out well for both teams. I mean, you know, Halliburton's a stud. Sabonis has helped out Sac a lot. I mean, this trade has really helped out the Knicks, and they're winning, and it's showing. And I think it's helping out the Raptors, and they get them a homegrown guy like Barrett back in the fold, which is pretty cool.
Yep.
Okay. Darren, college basketball?
Sure. I mean, listen, in conference play, it doesn't get any better than this. So last night, the 1-2 both lose. Today, the 5-3 lose. Okay, Denver. So...
down goes Houston, down goes Purdue.
Down goes Houston, down goes Purdue. Kansas loses tonight at UCF. And then Tennessee loses at Mississippi State. And you know what? I mean, and UConn was on the ropes at Xavier for a little bit. Now they're starting to pull away. So the 4 looks like it's going to survive. Right now the 9's in trouble. Oklahoma's losing at TCU. Not that they've lost it yet. But, well, once you get into the conference play, it gets interesting. Couple teams under the radar just to look at. We all know the pretty good teams. Kev's South Carolina team's an under the radar squad. They got bombed the hell out of themselves last night at Alabama.
Yeah, but the second half.
They played incredible. The most physical team in the country on Saturday in Mississippi State. And yeah, listen, they got a friendly whistle 23-15 in foul calls. But you know what? At home, you're going to get that. The fact is that after that game, to play 2 days later against a good team like Alabama on the road, Mississippi State is just so ugly to play against. They are so physical.
I mean, that was a close game at halftime, and then Alabama just blew them out in the second half.
Yeah, it was relatively close. I mean, but when you lose by 20, what did they lose? 71-47?
Yeah.
they lost so badly that, you got to count the full game on it. But they're a team under the radar, and they're a tournament team at this point in time, and they're playing real good.
Before the Alabama game, Lenardi had them up as a 9 seed.
Yeah, this is it's a good team. And the big difference on this team, Kev, is, and I watched him last year at Minnesota a lot too, and before that he was at Moorhead. Talon Cooper is playing well, and he was awful last year at Minnesota, so it's good to see him bounce back.
And you have Michi Johnson.
Michi was good last year too. He's not awful. Michi can play. They have length, and they're going to be pretty good. Yep. Wake Forest, they lost last night also, but they've been excellent. They're now 3-1 in conference. They went up against the tallest team you'll ever play against, Florida State, with a point guard 6'7". You know, it's just length upon length upon length. St. John's held on tonight against Providence, but Patino has the team in the right direction, guys.
Yeah.
Nevada, 1 loss. Alfred has this team 15-1. They're playing great. NC State was playing Carolina. That game's still close. We'll see what happens there. They're playing well. Clemson lost tonight, but they had been really good up till that point. Utah State's 15-1. Colorado State lost last night, but they're really good. And Seton Hall is beating the top of the conference all over the place. So, I mean, there are some teams under the radar. Obviously, we have the good teams going on. Kentucky and Carolina seem like they're back, as is Duke. Tennessee lost tonight against Mississippi State, but they're a good squad. You know, Houston, Purdue. Remember last time a 1 seed lost in the first round? It was Virginia before last year with Purdue. They won the title the year after that. Interesting to see how Purdue's going to do after losing in the first round last year to Fairly Ridiculous, G. You remember the place jumping? We were going nuts watching that game last year. So a lot going on. Bad news, Bryce Hopkins, the leading player for Providence, out for the year. They've lost the 0-2, now 0-3 since he got hurt. This was a ranked team before that. Kim English was doing a great job there. A couple of teams of real disappointment. UCLA got swept at home by Stanford and Cal. Unacceptable. Unacceptable. This team can't score. Louisville, Maryland, Michigan also struggling. And one last point. After the adulation of watching South Carolina hold off Mississippi State the other day, 68-62, stayed around for TCU, Kansas. I don't know if you watched the end of this game. With a minute to go, TCU's up 2. And they're trying to get the ball into Hunter Dickinson, who transferred to Kansas from Michigan. And it's stolen. But as he steals the ball, his elbow goes back and hits Dickinson in the mouth. And he goes down. They call a flagrant. So instead of a 2 chance to go up by 4, they give him Two foul shots in the ball. Kansas holds on and wins by two. Hate seeing a flagrant foul called on something that was totally accidental in the last minute of a game at the Fog. TCU should have had the upset. And right now they're beating number 9 Oklahoma by 8, but there's plenty of time to go in that game. But college basketball alive and well. Lots of fun stuff going on. Gino.
All right. Anything else you guys need to you want to mention, Kev?
Paul, if you're still with us, an hour and 20 minutes in. We have to mention hockey a little bit. Surprisingly enough, teams are up to about 40, 41 games. We're halfway through the NHL season already. Mm-hmm. Just look at the Metropolitan. Rangers, 54 points. They're still fifth overall in points scored in the league. Carolina, Philly, the Islanders, Devils, Caps, Penguins, the six teams, 5 points separating them. At most four, maybe three, depending on exactly how the wild card falls. This is going to be a terrific race the second half of the year. Connor Bedard out 6 to 8 weeks with a broken jaw. Philadelphia Flyers trade their fifth overall pick from the 2022 draft. Cutter Gauthier, who apparently came out and was behind the scenes, told the Flyers, well, you know, after saying, yeah, I don't want to be a Flyer. Now he's saying, well, maybe I don't want to be a Flyer. So they traded him away. And Tort says, oh, well, if you don't want to be able to play for us, then we don't want you. Good riddance. Goodbye. Now, Gauthier, he did have 2 goals, 12 points in 7 games as the U.S. won the World Juniors Hockey Championship last week. Prospect.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing about that series was that, also Hughes is hurt again for the Devils. He's out multiple weeks. Could be over a month even. So that last time he got hurt, the team kind of went into a tailspin. Jack Hughes is amazing to watch.
Yep.
So two things about the U.S. winning the World Juniors, right? Number one, little fisticuffs at the end of the game against Sweden with a little hot dog, and don't need that.
No.
Don't need that. That was on us. That wasn't even on the Swedes. That was on us. They fought us. But
Swedes don't fight.
Yeah, but they stood up for themselves, so we'll give them that. Number two, listen to them belt out the national anthem.
Oh, well, that was
freaking
great.
Awesome. With a capital A. So I loved every second of that. I'll tell you that much. That's what I got on hockey. Yep. You know, Seattle's red hot. Edmonton's red hot. Vancouver's playing unbelievable. They came to New York and they swept us both, Islanders and Rangers, by 3 goals each. You know, there's a lot of good hockey going on in the East, and there's a lot of good hockey going on in the West as well. Winnipeg's playing good hockey. There's a lot of – it's going to be a fun playoff. And right now, the way we've been watching hockey lately, the difference between the ones and the eights sometimes are not nearly what they once were.
Yep.
Not nearly what it used to be, even though I missed the old Patrick division, you know, 7-game, let's just fight every night type of thing. Let's drop the gloves and go. I do miss that, but at the same time, it's going to be good hockey all the way down the stretch. That's all I got, boys.
That's it for me.
All right, G, you're good? Okay, let's wrap it up. An hour and 22 in, Paul. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Darren, along here with Gino, here with Kevin, talking about the wonderful, wild, and wacky world of sports. Please download the podcast anywhere you get a podcast, whether it be through Spotify, through an Apple product, on TuneIn, whatever you like. We post on social media. Please share it. Please tell us what you think. Sometimes we post things that are funny. Sometimes we post things that are real. Sometimes we ask your opinion. Rather than just liking it, tell us who you think's going to win. That's what we really want to know. So post on, share along. Let's make the podcast bigger and better. Tell us what you want more of. And without any further ado, hail to the victors, and may your sports be with you.
Thanks for selling your car to Carvana. Here's your check.
Whoa, when did I get here?
What do you mean?
I swear it was just moments ago that I accepted a great offer from Carvana online. I must have time traveled to the future.
It was just moments ago. We do same day pickup. Here's your check for that great offer.
It is the future.
It's the present and just the convenience of Carvana. Sorry to blow your mind.
It's all good. It happens all the time.
Sell your car the convenient way to
Carvana.
Pickup times may vary and fees may apply.